sorry to be curt, Ash, Flynn said, but can we do this quickly? We need to get back up to Cumbria. He nodded, glanced at Poe, and removed some documents from his briefcase. He placed them on the table in front of him. He coughed gently before launching into a pre-prepared speech. It sounded as though he was talking on autopilot. As you know, D.S. Poe, suspension is considered a neutral act, and it is up to the organization to decide whether the suspension remains justified. Yesterday, Director of Intelligence Edward Van Zyl decided that, despite the IPCC case remaining active, the end of the internal investigation means your suspension should be lifted. Barrett searched through his paperwork. Handing Poe a one-sheet document, he said, This is confirmation in writing. Can you please sign at the bottom? Poe did. It had been a long time since he'd had to write his work signature, the careless scrawl he wouldn't have dared use on a check. It felt strange, but in a comforting way. He slid the document back across the table. The desk phone rang, and Flynn got up to answer it. While she spoke quietly, Barrett busied himself with asking Poe if he wanted employee assistance like counselling or refresher training on the IT system. Poe answered no to everything, as they both knew he would. With another box ticked in the big book of HR rules, Barrett got down to the good stuff. From his briefcase, he removed a succession of things that Poe considered the tools of his trade. He handed Poe a work mobile, an encrypted BlackBerry. Barrett explained it was pre-programmed with some contact details he might need, and his online calendar had been synced to it. It meant anyone with authorized access to his e-diary could enter appointments. Poe made a mental note to disable it as soon as he found out how. The BlackBerry was internet-enabled. He'd be able to surf the web, receive his secure emails and text messages. He could even make phone calls with it. The BlackBerry has the Protect app installed, and it's switched on, Barrett said. Poe looked at him blankly. It means the location can be logged from a website.
You're spying on me.
Deputy Director Hansen insisted, I'm afraid. Poe slipped the BlackBerry into his pocket. He would disable that later as well. Barrett gave him a small black leather wallet that contained Poe's warrant card and NCA ID. Poe casually opened it, checked it was the right one, then put it in his inside pocket. He felt whole again. It was time to get back to work. He glanced over at Flynn. She was frowning as she listened to whoever was on the other end of the phone.
Since you've been gone, Detective Sergeant Flynn has been promoted into the temporary detective inspector role at ESCAS, Barrett said. Director Van Zyl has made it clear that this is to remain the case. The conditions of your suspension being lifted are that you will return to work in your substantive post of Detective Sergeant. In effect, you will report to D.I. Flynn.
Not a problem, Poe said. Flynn put down the phone and turned to Poe. Her face was ashen.
There's been another one.
Chapter 9.
Where?
A hill walker stumbled into him somewhere near a town called Cockermouth. You know it?
Poe nodded. It was a small market town in West Cumbria. He was surprised the immolation man had already changed his M.O.
You sure?
Flynn said she was, and then asked why.
There aren't any stone circles in Cockermouth. Not to my knowledge, anyway.
She checked her notepad.
Cockermouth? That's what the S.I.O. said.
Poe stood.
Let's get going, then.
It was getting serious. If the fourth victim had just been found, then he was next on the conveyor belt. Barrett said,
I'm supposed to give you a reorientation tour before you start.
He withered in front of their combined looks.
But I suppose, under the circumstances, it can wait.
Good man, Poe said. I want to take an analyst with us, someone who can do a bit of everything. I have an idea where to start, and there'll be a lot of data mining to do. Who's the best we have?
Flynn hesitated, and her face coloured.
Jonathan Pierce.
And he's the best, is he?
Well, officially Tilly Bradshaw is the best. She has a skill set like no other here. She's the one who found your name in all that medical data.
Poe thought he'd recognized the name. What's the problem, then?
She's one of our special people. She refuses to leave the office.
Poe smiled.
What you need, D.I. Flynn, is a sergeant.
Chapter 10 Poe marched into the open plan office and shouted for Tilly Bradshaw. A small, thin woman stood up. She looked shy and bookish, a typical cube dweller. She pouted and sat back down when she saw who'd shouted for her. He turned and spoke to Barrett.
Can you stay there a moment, Ash? I might need some help.
Poe had loved being a sergeant. In hindsight, he shouldn't have taken the temporary inspector role. It came with more management responsibility than he was comfortable with. He'd been good at being a sergeant, and by the looks of things, Eskass had been without one for too long.
Miss Bradshaw, my office, now.
Bradshaw slouched along to the sergeant's office. As it had recently been Flynn's office, it was scarily tidy. Poe sat behind the desk. Bradshaw didn't shut the door behind her, and that was fine. The unit would do well to pay attention to the new way of working. He gestured to the seat in front of the desk, and she perched on the end. Poe studied her. 90% of being a sergeant was managing people. She wore no makeup, and behind her gold-colored Harry Potter glasses were gray, myopic eyes. She was fish-belly pale. The front of her brightly colored T-shirt showed the logo of the all-girl Ghostbusters remake. Her canvas trousers were khaki with large side pockets. Cargo pants, he thought they were called. Her fingers were long and fine-boned. The nails were chewed to the quick. Despite her earlier show of defiance, she looked apprehensive.
Do you know who I am?
She nodded.
Your name is Washington Poe. You're 38 years old, and you were born in Kendal, Cumbria. You transferred from Cumbria Constabulary to Eskass, and it is believed that a mistake you made led directly to the torture and death of a suspect. The IPCC are investigating you. You're on suspension.
Poe stared at her. His piss-taking radar wasn't beeping. She was being serious. This was how she talked.
Wrong. As of, he said, checking his watch, 5 minutes ago, I'm Detective Sergeant Washington Poe. And from now on, if I ask you to do something, you do it. Are we clear?
D.I. Stephanie Flynn says I'm only to do what she says.
Did she now?
She did, Detective Sergeant Washington Poe.
Poe's fine.
She did, Poe.
I meant you should call me Actually, you can call me what you want, Poe said, realizing he didn't have the energy for a meaningless discussion over forms of address. And why did D.I. Flynn tell you that?
Sometimes people like to joke with me. They tell me to do things I'm not supposed to, she replied, pushing her glasses back up her nose and tucking an errant lock of wispy brown hair behind her ear. A flickering of understanding crept up on him.
Okay, but I'm your new sergeant, so you do have to do what I tell you to do, he said.
She stared at him. Eventually, Poe said,
Wait here.
He walked into Flynn's office. She was talking to Barrett.
That was quick, she said.
Poe could have sworn she was suppressing a smile.
Can you pop into my office and tell Miss Bradshaw that she's also to do what I tell her?
Of course.
She followed him into his office.
Tilly, this is Washington Poe, and he's our new sergeant. He wants to be called Poe, she replied.
Flynn glanced at Poe, who shrugged in a what-you-gonna-do kind of way.
Well, whatever. You're to do what he says as well now, okay?
Bradshaw nodded.
But no one else, Tilly,
Flynn added before leaving them alone.
Now we've got that sorted, Tilly. I'd like you to go home, pack a suitcase, and meet me and D.I. Flynn back here in an hour, Poe said. We're going on a road trip for a few days.
I can't,
she said immediately. Poe sighed.
Wait here.
A minute later, he was back with an NCA standard contract of employment. He slid it across the desk.
Show me where it says that, because all I can see is the paragraph that says, there may be occasions where you are required to work unsocial hours and away from your office base.
Bradshaw didn't look at it. Poe continued.
I certainly can't see anything that says Tilly Bradshaw is exempt.
Bradshaw closed her eyes and said,
Section 3, paragraph 2, subsection 7, states that discretionary benefits, in my case, not working away from the office, can be considered a binding term of an employment contract if well established over a period of time. The legal definition is customs and practices.
She reopened her eyes and looked at him. Poe was vaguely aware of the HR rule that said if someone had been doing something for a long time, it could be considered part of their job, even if it was in direct contradiction to their contract of employment. As stupid as it sounded, people had been awarded money in employment tribunals on that rule. He stared at her, open-mouthed.
You memorized the employment manual?
Bradshaw frowned.
I read it when I signed it.
When was that?
11 months, 14 days ago.
Poe stood up again.
Wait here, please.
He walked round to Flynn's office.
Jonathan Pierce will be happy to get out of the office for a few days, she said.
He wasn't giving up so easily.
Is she all there?
She's fine,
she replied. She's had a sheltered upbringing and can sometimes be taken advantage of.
She's very literal, and tends to believe everything she's told. As much as I can, I keep a close eye on her. When you learn how to handle her, she's the most important asset you'll have.
But she's not field ready.
She has an IQ close to 200, but probably can't boil an egg.
Ash, is there any legal reason why I can't take her?
Poe asked.
If she claims customs and practices, we'd defend it and she'd lose.
Poe looked at him. He waited for a yes or no answer.
No, he said. There's nothing in employment law that offers her any protection.
That's settled then, he said. And this time last year, I couldn't boil an egg.
Poe walked back into his office and sat down. He steepled his fingers and leaned forwards to face Bradshaw. He'd try something Flynn had tried on him the day before and hope Bradshaw wasn't in the mood to bluff him.
You have two choices. One, you go home and pack a bag for a Cumbrian spring. Or two, I accept your notice right now.
Bradshaw looked even more nervous than before.
I'm missing something, Poe thought. What is it, Tilly? Why can't you leave the office?
Eventually she stood, her eyes brimming with tears. She stomped out of his office without a backwards look. Poe watched as she made her way to her desk. She got to her workstation and slumped in her chair. She put on some headphones and began typing. He followed her over. Perhaps she hadn't understood the urgency.
Miss Bradshaw, D.I. Flynn tells me you're the best we have. I need you up in Cumbria. You're no use to me behind a desk.
Duh, she said. What do you think I'm doing?
An arrogant-looking young man laughed insolently. Poe gave him a look that would have withered a thistle. He read what Bradshaw had typed into Google's search bar. What to pack for a Cumbrian spring?
You've got to be kidding me, he said.
She looked up. It was clear she wasn't. There were no personal items around her workspace. Flynn had tidied up the office since he'd left, but everyone else had managed to personalize their workspaces. Mugs with World's Best Dad, cheaply framed photographs of partners and kids, the odd risque calendar. Bradshaw's was empty.
Have you just moved to this desk, Tilly?
She looked confused.
No. I've been here almost 12 months, Poe.
Where are all your things, then?
What things?
You know, your mug. A cuddly toy, a novelty pen, he replied. In other words, where's all your shit?
Oh, she said. I used to bring things in, but people took them. For a joke. I never got them back.
Poe's heart missed a beat.
Look, just pack as if you're going away for a few days. A change of clothes, some toiletries, that type of thing. I also need you to bring all the gear you need to catch a serial killer, he said. And be quick. There's been a fourth murder.
You don't understand how much trouble I'm in, she muttered.
An hour later, Poe understood. Bradshaw had left to pack. Flynn had needed to authorize a taxi, as Bradshaw didn't have a car, and her mother usually dropped her off and collected her, when Diane, the receptionist, walked over. She was smiling, and Poe already recognized that as a bad sign.
Phone call for you, she said. I'll put it through to your office.
D.S. Poe, he said when he picked up the phone.
It felt strange to have a rank in front of his name again.
How can I help you?
Hello, Sergeant Poe. This is Matilda's mother.
There was a pause, and Poe filled it.
I'm sorry, but you sure you have the right number? I don't know any Matilda.
You'll know her as Tilly. Tilly Bradshaw, she said. My daughter's just been on the phone saying she's had to go home to pack a suitcase, but she couldn't find the tent. She wants me to leave work to go and buy one. She also said she needed some canned goods and a tin opener. She wants me to bring it all to the office. You've got her awfully excited, Sergeant Poe.
A tent? Canned goods? I'm sorry, Mrs. Bradshaw, but I've got no idea what she's talking about. She'll be staying at the same hotel as the rest of the team. I'd assume that was obvious.
Well, that makes a lot more sense, I suppose. But why is she going up to Cumbria at all? It sounds dreadful up there.
Hey, I'm from Cumbria, he protested.
Oh, I'm sorry, but it does sound awfully bleak.
Poe was about to reply,
That's because it fucking is, but thought better of it.
He settled for,
It's Cumbria, not Baghdad, Mrs. Bradshaw. She's going to be assisting on a murder investigation.
And it won't be dangerous?
Not unless the immolation man decides to burn the hotel down.
And is that likely?
No, I was joking, Poe said. At least he knew where Bradshaw got her social skills from. She'll be perfectly safe. She's coming up for analytical support only. I doubt she'll even leave the hotel. That seemed to mollify her.
Okay, I'll allow it, she said. On one condition.
Poe bit back a sarcastic response. He thought about Bradshaw, worrying because she didn't think she'd be allowed to go. She hadn't been deliberately awkward at all.
Name it.
She rings home every night.
Under the circumstances, that didn't seem so unreasonable.
Deal, he said.
Now, there are a few things you need to know about Matilda, Sergeant Poe.
I'm listening.
Well, first of all, you need to understand that she's a wonderful girl and a marvellous daughter. I really couldn't ask for anyone better. But she has led an extremely sheltered life. She was at university when she should have been playing outside. She got her first Oxford degree when she was 16.
Poe whistled.
And she stayed on and got a master's and two PhDs, one in computers and the others in mathematics or something. It's all beyond me. We'd assumed she was going to spend her life at Oxford, going from research grant to research grant. People were throwing money at her. So how did she end up working for the National Crime Agency? Your guess is as good as mine, Sergeant Poe. But I suspect it's something to do with the willful streak she got from her father. She just came in from university one night and said she'd applied for a job. Wouldn't tell us what, as she knew we'd stop her.
Why would you do that?
You've met her, D.S. Poe. Matilda has an extraordinary mind. A once-in-a-generation mind, according to one of the professors who came to see us when she was 13. The flip side of that is, because she's never really lived in the real world before, she's never developed the life skills you and I take for granted. I suppose it was all about her brain's priorities. She finds social situations extremely difficult, and this has caused her problems in the past.
It was becoming clearer. Perhaps Flynn was right. Perhaps Bradshaw wasn't the right person for the job. He was about to tell Mrs. Bradshaw not to worry, that her daughter would be home for tea, when Bradshaw walked through the door.
She was still looking scared, but there was something else. She was exuding a nervous excitement. Now she knew she was going, it looked like she couldn't wait to get started. She walked over to her desk and began packing equipment.
"I'll take care of her, Mrs. Bradshaw. You have my word," Poe said, before hanging up.
Poe walked over and was about to help her, when the man who'd laughed earlier decided to entertain the assembled staff. He didn't realize Poe was standing behind him. He stood up and said,
"Look, everyone! Little Miss Retard's going on a road trip!"
A couple of people tittered. Most had seen Poe and recognized a shit sandwich when they saw one. The excitement in Bradshaw's eyes fizzled out. Her cheeks colored and her eyes dropped to the floor. Poe glanced back at her featureless workspace and everything clicked into place. She was being bullied. Before anyone could react, he'd taken three strides and dragged Laughing Man from his chair. Grabbing him by the back of his jacket, Poe ran him across the office and slammed his head into the wall.
"Name!"
Poe shouted. Silence.
"Name!"
Jonathan, the man stuttered, his face a mask of terror.
"Ashley Barrett, D.I. Flynn, out here, please."
Flynn rushed out. She was followed by the HR manager.
"Please repeat what you've just said for D.I. Flynn's benefit."
Jonathan's eyes were spinning like a slot machine as he searched for a way out. Poe's grip on his throat was vice-like. Without releasing him, Poe turned and addressed the room.
"Most of you haven't met me yet. I'm Detective Sergeant Washington Poe, and you all need to know that I absolutely won't tolerate bullies."
It was true. He wouldn't. Having a strange name, no mother, and a total weirdo for a father had been the toxic trio that made him a bully magnet at school. It hadn't taken long to work out that the only way he would survive was if there were consequences for anyone who picked on him. The bullies learned that Poe fought back, that he didn't back down and he wouldn't stop fighting. Start a fight with Poe and you had to be prepared to continue until someone was unconscious. It wasn't long before he was given a wide berth.
"So take a good look at your friend Jonathan here," he continued, "because this is the last time he steps foot in this office."
The whole office stared, open-mouthed.
"Does anyone think I'm being unfair?"
No one seemed to, or if they did, they were bright enough not to say.
"Did everyone hear what Jonathan called one of his colleagues?"
Everyone had, it seemed. Poe pointed at one.
"You, what's your name?"
"Jen."
"What did Jonathan say, Jen?"
"He called Tilly a retard, sir."
"I work for a living, Jen. Don't call me sir."
Poe turned to Flynn and Barrett. "Good enough?" Flynn turned to Barrett and said,
"It is for me. Ash?"
Barrett paused.
"I could have done without D.S. Poe assaulting..."
"He was holding a pen," Poe interrupted. "I thought he was going to use it as a weapon."
"Good enough, then," Barrett said. "Jonathan Pierce, I'm formally suspending you for gross misconduct, bullying, and using offensive language. Please let me have your credentials, and we'll arrange for a disciplinary hearing, at which point you'll no doubt be formally dismissed from the NCA.
But everyone calls her that," Jonathan said.
Poe could almost hear the room's sharp intake of breath. Jonathan had just committed the cardinal sin, ratting out colleagues to save his own skin. Poe said,
"Anyone else here committed gross misconduct?"
No one moved. A couple of people looked guilty, but it didn't look as though anyone was about to fall on their sword.
"Nope. Just you, it seems, Jonathan," Poe said.
He leaned in and whispered, "And if I hear there's been any comeback on my friend Tilly, I'll hunt you down and I'll twist your fucking fingers clean off. Are we clear? Nod if you understand." Jonathan nodded. "Good," Poe said. "Now fuck off." He let Jonathan go and he slumped to the ground. Turning to Bradshaw, he said, "You don't need a tent, Tilly. You'll be staying in a hotel with D.I. Flynn.
You got everything else?
She managed a nod.
What are you waiting for, then? Let's go and catch us a serial killer.
Chapter 11 Poe had assumed the three of them would share the driving. They pulled over at some services in Cheshire after Bradshaw had announced,
I need the toilet.
But when Poe threw her the keys and told her she'd be driving the last leg, she told him she didn't have a driving license. He thought for a moment.
So why the hell have you been sitting in the passenger seat all this time? Non-drivers sit in the back.
She folded her arms.
I always sit in the passenger seat. It's statistically the safest.
Flynn stopped the argument before it could start by climbing into the rear.
I prefer the back anyway, Poe, she explained.
Bradshaw continued lecturing them on car safety as Poe pulled back onto the M6. He stopped listening before he was off the slip road.
He'd never met anyone like her. She didn't seem to understand any of society's basic norms. There was no filter between her brain and her mouth, and she blurted out whatever she was thinking. She had little to no understanding of non-verbal communication. She either refused to make eye contact or wouldn't break it. If he ignored her when she said his name, she simply repeated it until he answered.
After a while, they descended into silence. Poe glanced in the rearview mirror. Flynn was asleep.
Can you do me a favour, Tilly?
He reached into his jacket pocket and passed over his BlackBerry.
There's an e-diary thing and some sort of tracking app on this phone. Can you disable them?
Yes, Poe.
She made no move to take it.
Will you disable them?
She hesitated.
Am I supposed to?
Yes,
he lied. She nodded and started fiddling with his phone.
But if D.I. Flynn asks... Don't tell her, he added.
Do you like working for S-Cast, Tilly? He said 5 minutes after she'd returned his BlackBerry.
Oh, gosh, yes, she replied, her face lighting up. It's marvellous. It's not everywhere you get to adapt theoretical mathematics into real-world applications.
Damn straight, Poe said, without cracking a smile.
It had been the first time she'd really smiled. When she did, her face was transformed. After they talked about her S-Cast work, they discussed her time at Oxford. It was a one-sided conversation. Poe didn't have a clue what she was talking about. Maths had ended for him as soon as they replaced numbers with letters. It was clear Flynn had been right, though. Bradshaw was an asset. She had an in-depth understanding of all their profiling disciplines, but her real strength was being able to devise bespoke solutions as and when they were required. Flynn had told him it was her program that arranged the slash wounds into his name. He thanked her. She'd probably saved his life. She blushed.
Why are you called Washington Poe? She said minutes later.
She smiled shyly when she realized what she'd said. She rephrased it.
Poe, why is your first name Washington?
Don't know. Ask me another, Poe replied.
Why does no one like you? She said.
Poe glanced at her. She wasn't being rude. She didn't seem to understand the concept of small talk. If she asked you something, it was because she wanted to know the answer.
Boy, you just come right out and say things, don't you? I'm sorry, Poe, she mumbled. D.I. Stephanie Flynn says I have to work on my people skills.
It's fine, Tilly. It's refreshingly honest, actually, he said, keeping his eyes on the road as he overtook a lorry. And I didn't realize I was that unpopular.
Oh, yes. I listened to Deputy Director of Intelligence Justin Hansen and Detective Inspector Stephanie Flynn talking about you.
Deputy Director Hansen blames me for not getting promoted, he said.
Why is that, Poe?
A lot of people didn't want me investigating Peyton Williams, Tilly. He was an MP's aide, and Deputy Director Hansen, along with some other senior managers, were terrified of causing a scandal. If they'd listened to me in the first place, Peyton Williams wouldn't be dead.
Oh, she said. I don't care for Deputy Director Justin Hansen too much. I think he's mean.
You've got that right, Poe said.
And anyway, you couldn't have heard them this morning. Even I couldn't hear what they were saying, and I was nearer D.I. Flynn's office than you were.
Not this morning, she said. I was in Conference Room B with Deputy Director Justin Hansen, D.I. Stephanie Flynn, and Director Edward Van Zyl when I was showing them the MSCT data. After a while, I think they forgot I was there.
Poe said nothing. He glanced in the rearview mirror again. Flynn had woken up. Her eyes were red and gritty. Car sleep was never as satisfying as bed sleep. Bradshaw turned in her seat and said,
"You don't like Poe, do you, D.I. Stephanie Flynn?"
"What are you talking about, Tilly?" she exclaimed. She looked worried, though.
"Of course I like Sergeant Poe."
"Oh," she said. "I thought when Director Edward Van Zyl said that the serious crime analysis section needed Poe because he had an encyclopedic understanding of serial killers, and you said, 'But a microscopic understanding of not being a dickhead, sir,' it was because you didn't like him."
Poe laughed so hard, hot coffee jetted out of his nostrils.
"Tilly," Flynn said, mortified.
"What?"
"You should never repeat private discussions."
"Oh."
"That wasn't a nice thing to say. About either of us," Flynn said.
Bradshaw's bottom lip began to quiver, and Poe jumped in.
"Don't worry about it, Tilly. Being liked is overrated."
She smiled.
"That's good, because no one likes me either."
He turned to see if she was joking. She wasn't.
Bradshaw turned to look out of the window. The conversation was over. Poe glanced at Flynn in the mirror. Her face was red with embarrassment. He winked to show there were no hard feelings. He was beginning to like Matilda Bradshaw.
The rest of the journey was uneventful, and they arrived at the Shapwells Hotel just after 7 in the evening. Flynn and Bradshaw checked in while Poe collected his mail. Although it wasn't his official address, it wasn't fair to expect a postman to walk over the rough fells to Herdwick Croft, and the hotel allowed him to have his mail delivered to reception. There was very little. That was one of the perks of living silently. You got very little junk mail. Flynn met him at reception.
"Sorted?"
"Yeah," she sighed. "Tilly wanted a room nearer the fire exit, so we had to do some swapping around. But she seems happy now. I've told her to get something to eat and then have an early night."
"Let's go and see victim number 4, then."
Long Meg and her daughters, the scene of the 3rd murder, and Castle Rigg, the scene of the 1st, were 2 of the most visually impressive prehistoric monuments in the country. They were internationally known stone circles. Cumbria also had countless other Neolithic circles, including some that were so small they could only be identified from the air. Poe didn't know of any near Cockermouth. He suspected that either the police or the immolation man had seen a circle when there wasn't one. Most fells in Cumbria had naturally occurring rocky outcrops and stone formations, and if you were standing in the middle of one, it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to imagine they'd been strategically placed by a Stone Age civilization thousands of years ago. But Poe was wrong. There was a stone circle near Cockermouth. Poe navigated the roads as they got smaller and smaller. He turned right at Dubworth, a tiny village on the edge of Bassenthwaite Lake, and 5 minutes later, the flashing glare of blue lights guided them to where they needed to be. Poe parked at the back of a long row of police vehicles. A uniformed officer was standing at a gate, holding a clipboard. He asked to see their ID and gave Poe a funny look as he recorded his name.
"Is there a stone circle up there?" Poe asked.
The uniformed cop nodded.
"Elver Plain. Supposed to have had something to do with a trade in Neolithic axes."
When you were on cordon duty in the middle of nowhere, there was very little to do but Google things on your phone.
"This is the outer cordon," Poe checked.
"Yep," he replied. "The inner cordon's up there."
He pointed towards a sharply inclined, windswept hill. Poe couldn't see anyone, but he could hear voices. As they climbed, they met another uniformed cop on his way down, who told them they were nearly there. They kept walking up until they saw it. The circle was on a level terrace on the southern slope of Elver Hill. It was bathed in artificial light.
15 grey stones formed a circle about 40 yards in diameter. The tallest was no more than a yard from the ground. Some of the others were barely visible. It was a hive of activity. CSI, clad head to toe in white forensic suits, milled about in organized chaos. Some knelt on the ground working, while others focused in and around an evidence tent that had been erected in the middle of the circle. The inner cordon was set up so the entirety of the circle's circumference was within the blue and white police tape. Poe and Flynn introduced themselves to a cop with another clipboard.
"The boss'll be out soon," the uniformed constable said. "Can't let you in without his permission."
Poe nodded. Good crime scene discipline usually meant a good SIO. Ian Gamble might not have the flashes of inspiration that cracked the impossible cases, but he played to his strengths. And why not? 99% of murders were solved by thorough and methodical investigations. Flynn turned to face him.
"Is there anything to be gained by going in? We'll get the photos when they're ready."
"I'll have a quick look, if you don't mind. I want to get a feel for him."
She nodded. One of the white-suited men looked up and saw them. He left the conversation he was having and walked over to them. He pulled off his face mask as soon as he'd left the cordon. It was Ian Gamble, the SIO. He reached out and shook Poe's hand.
"Good to see you again, Poe," he said. "You had any thoughts on why your name was on the last one's chest?"
Poe shook his head. No niceties, no small talk. Strictly business.
"Never mind. We can get into it later," Gamble said. "You want to look?" "Just to see what my first impressions are." "Fair enough," he said,
before turning to a man standing near a box of equipment.
"Boyle," he shouted. "Bring DS Poe a suit."
At the sound of Poe's name, another man in a forensic suit pulled off his mask. It was Killian Reed. In a voice loud enough for the whole hill to hear, Reed said,
"Misunderstood by colleagues, ignored by managers, taken for granted by everyone else, ladies and gentlemen, I present the great Washington Poe."
Poe reddened. His friend bounded over, leapt to the cordon fence, causing Gamble to wince, and wringed Poe's outstretched hand until it hurt.
"I see how it is now," Reed said, a grin on his face. "I only get to see you when there's an emergency."
"That how it is, Poe? Shite show."
Poe shrugged. "Killian, there'd be time to catch up later." Reed turned to Flynn and said,
"So, how do you know this friendless weirdo?"
Poe introduced them.
"D.I. Flynn, this is my friend Killian Reed. He was a D.S. in major incidents."
"Still a D.S. in major incidents," he said.
"I take it you're all staying at Shapwell's. I'll get a room there one night and we can all have a drink."
"It'll be the best night ever," Flynn said, woodenly.
Poe decided the reunion could wait.
"So, what's in there?"
He directed the question at Gamble. Reed might be the only friend he had on the force, but it was still Gamble's crime scene.
"You know the rule of nines?"
Poe nodded. It was how the extent of burns was medically assessed. The head and arms were all 9% each, while the legs, the front, and the back of the torso were all 18% each. That added up to 99%. The remaining 1% was the genitalia. Gamble said,
"Well, our lad's getting better. Although he was the most heavily tortured, the first victim only had burns covering his legs and back. Not much on his front, and his arms weren't touched. The burns increased on the second, and by the third, the victim was around about the 90% mark.
And this one?
Come and see for yourself."
While Poe changed into the suit Boyle had brought over, Gamble replaced the one he was wearing to avoid any cross-contamination issues. Flynn didn't bother. She'd seen victim number three in situ and stayed with Reed. Poe was signed into the inner cordon and followed Gamble across the footboard CSI had laid down to avoid key evidence being trampled on. The smell hit him first. 5 yards from the forensic tent, and the stench became overpowering. Poe knew there was a myth that burning humans smelled like pork. They really didn't. Human flesh alone might, but people who burn to death haven't been processed the way slaughtered animals have. They haven't been bled, and their internal organs haven't been removed. Digestive tracts full of food and feces remain in the body. Everything that burns has its own unique, foul smell. Blood is iron-rich, and Poe could detect the faint metallic aroma. That was the most pleasant. Muscles burn differently to body fat, internal organs burn differently to blood, and burning guts have a smell unlike any other. The combined odor was thick, sweet, and cloying. On top of it all was the unmistakable stench of petrol. The smell coated the inside of Poe's nose and the back of his throat. He'd be smelling and tasting it for days. He retched and almost vomited, but managed to hold it together. Gamble opened the tent flap for him. He walked inside. The Home Office pathologist was still working on the body. It was on its side and twisted into an unnatural position. The eyeballs had burst, then dried, and the mouth was open, as if the victim had died screaming. Poe knew heat did strange things to corpses, and the mouth could just as easily have opened post-mortem. The hands were burnt to stumps, and although it would no doubt be confirmed later, Poe was sure the victim's 1% was missing. The corpse was the colour and consistency of rough black leather. It looked as though it had been dipped in lava, then dried in a furnace. Apart from the soles of the feet, they were still shockingly pink. The pathologist looked up and grunted a greeting. Poe asked,
"You think the same accelerant was used?"
"Definitely," he said. He was an older man, and thin. The forensic suit billowed out like a hot air balloon. He pointed at the victim's thigh.
"You see that split? The University of West Florida has been researching this for a few years, and they know that the outer surface of the skin fries and peels first. It takes 5 minutes for the thicker dermal layer to shrink and split, and as untreated petrol will only burn for a minute or so, additional fuel must have been used."
Poe didn't want to know why the University of West Florida had been conducting research like that. He wanted to know how they'd been doing it even less. They did execute a lot of death row inmates over there, though.
"And if you look here,"
the pathologist said, pointing at the thighs, buttocks and waist,
"all the fat has rendered down. Human fat is a good fuel, but it needs something to act as a wick. He was naked, so we know it wasn't his clothes. I'll know more when I get him back on the table, but I suspect that every time the fire was dying down, the killer added more accelerant."
"How long?"
"For him to die?"
Poe shook his head.
"To reduce the body to this?"
5 to 7 hours, I'd estimate. The muscles have shrunk and contracted, which has caused the peculiar position he's in now. And that takes time."
"And the soles of the feet?"
"He was standing throughout the whole thing. The ground protected them."
He turned back to the task in hand. Gamble said,
"You can't see it, but there's a small hole underneath the body. He was staked in an upright position. Staking his victims is one of the adaptations he's made since he started."
"Must have been a metal one," Poe said. "A wooden one would have collapsed after 15 minutes.
Gamble said nothing, and Poe knew he'd already figured that out.
"I think I know why this one's been burnt more than the others, though," Poe said. "I'm assuming you've been up here all day."
Gamble nodded.
"Since 10 o'clock this morning." "What you won't know, then, is that none of this can be seen from the road. You can barely see the crime scene lights. The circle's hidden from view until you're almost on it. And because this road is mainly used by people going to and from the golf course, most people leaving the clubhouse would be going away from it, back into Cockermouth."
"So he had more time," Gamble said. Poe nodded.
"And if he waited until after last orders at the 19th hole, there was virtually no chance of being observed."
"That's helpful." Poe wasn't sure how. They already knew the immolation man was careful.
"Any early thoughts?" Gamble asked. "Just that I'm never accepting a barbecue invite from the University of West Florida."
Gamble nodded, but didn't bluff. They left the tent and the inner cordon and rejoined Flynn and Reed. Poe was glad to remove the constrictive forensic suit.
"We haven't released anything to the media about D.S. Poe's connection to the case, D.I. Flynn," Gamble said. "I've agreed with my assistant chief that we can use it as an additional control filter for anyone ringing up claiming responsibility. The information is extremely restricted, so don't put it on any documentation."
"Makes sense," Flynn said, nodding. "And I think we should also stay away from the official investigation, sir. Keep Poe out of it completely. We can work from the hotel for now."
Gamble nodded. Poe got the impression he was relieved Flynn had suggested it first.
"And D.S. Reed seems to like D.S. Poe, so he can be your liaison. I'll second him to you for now. He'll make sure you have everything you need," he said. "As well as analytical support, can Eskass take the name angle? Try and figure out Poe's involvement? We'll exchange information at the end of every day, even if it's a nil report. How's that sound?"
"Perfect," she said.
After another round of handshakes, Poe and Flynn made their way back to the car. As soon as they were out of earshot, Flynn turned to face Poe.
"What was that about?"
"The liaison thing."
"Yes, that." She sounded angry. "Do they not trust me?"
Poe shrugged.
"It's not you they don't trust, Steph. It's me."
Chapter 12 Shap Wells was a hotel with a past. Almost as isolated as Herdwick Croft, it could only be accessed via a mile-long drive down the narrowest of roads. During the Second World War, its isolation had been used to the Allies' advantage. It was requisitioned from the Earl of Lonsdale and turned into Prisoner of War Camp No. 15. It had held up to 200 prisoners, mainly German officers, with the camp leader at one point being a German prince related to Queen Mary. The main north-south railway line was near, and security had been high, as trains had facilitated POW escapes from the camp. Two barbed wire fences had been erected around the hotel, and towers had allowed guards to cover every angle with powerful searchlights. The concrete bases of the guard towers were still visible, if you knew where to look. Poe did. He knew the hotel well. His car was permanently parked there. He took advantage of the free Wi-Fi when he needed to go online, and he ate in the restaurant at least twice a week. Next morning, before making his way to the hotel, Poe left Edgar with Thomas Hume, the farmer who'd sold him the croft and the surrounding land the year before. They'd become friends, and did the occasional favour for each other. Poe allowed Hume to graze his sheep on his land, and helped him with the odd bit of dry stone walling, usually when Hume needed muscle rather than technical ability, and Hume looked after Edgar when Poe was away. Although he usually walked the 2 miles to the hotel, that morning Poe took his quad bike. He collected his mail from the receptionist, a New Zealand girl who always had a smile for him, and went looking for Flynn and Bradshaw. They just finished breakfast, and Poe helped himself to a coffee. Flynn was wearing another power suit, black this time. Bradshaw was wearing the same cargo pants and the same trainers, but a different T-shirt. This one had a faded picture of the Incredible Hulk and the phrase, "Don't make me angry." He was surprised Flynn had allowed it. Then again, he wasn't. The art of management was all about avoiding pointless battles. 5 minutes later, Killian Reed joined them. Flynn frowned in annoyance, but shook his hand. He updated them on the fourth victim. He still hadn't been identified, but the body had been recovered and was now being prepared for post-mortem. Gamble wanted to know if Eskass would put it through the MSCT. Flynn confirmed they would. Flynn had managed to get the use of a small conference room for the duration of their involvement. Poe was pleased they'd be working away from the main investigation. He'd never been the most popular cop in Cumbria. His tendency to speak truth to power meant that he'd been tolerated at best, and he knew his suspension from the NCA had been joyfully received in his old force. He didn't care, but he didn't want any ongoing antagonism to get in the way of what they were doing. They were in the garden room on the ground floor. Despite the age and grandeur of the hotel, the room was modern and well-equipped. Flynn had chosen a bigger room than they needed. It allowed them to section it off.
They spent the first half hour setting up Bradshaw's equipment and arranging the tables so they had a conference area and enough space to move about. They weren't allowed to pin or blue tack anything to the walls, so Flynn called for additional whiteboards and flip charts. Incident rooms were the beating hearts of major investigations, and Poe felt the familiar tingle of excitement. There was something exhilarating about setting up a new one. Before long, it would be populated with clues and questions of things they knew and things they wanted to know. It was going to be different to previous investigations in which Poe had been involved. In the official incident room at Carlton Hall, Gamble would have an army of staff. Office managers, action managers, document readers, indexers, exhibits officers, house-to-house coordinators, disclosure officers, and file preparation officers. At Shap Wells, there was just the four of them. It was liberating. When Bradshaw had hooked up the computers, they began. Flynn kicked it off.
I'm suggesting we start with why Poe's name was carved into the chest of Michael James. Anyone disagree?
Poe gave everyone the chance to speak up. No one did. He raised his hand.
Just a thought.
They all looked at him.
I think, for now at least, we should assume it's a red herring. I don't know any of the victims, and I know DSC Gamble is going through all my old cases to see if anyone I put away fits the profile of a serial killer.
What value can we add? Flynn said.
You have an alternative line of inquiry, I take it?
Poe nodded.
There's a far more important question that hasn't been answered yet.
Which is? Reed asked.
Why the gap between the first and second victim was so long, and the gaps between the second, third, and fourth were so short?
Flynn looked slightly annoyed, and he knew why. Experience suggested, and it was backed up by statistics, that serial murderers started slowly, then speeded up. Before he could be patronized, he continued.
I know you're going to give me a lesson in serial killers and how their urge to kill is sated after the first murder, but the amount of time this holds them is ever reducing. Am I right?
Flynn nodded.
And none of the victims knew each other, right?
This time it was Reed who answered.
The investigation has found no link between them. Of course, I can't speak for the fourth victim. He hasn't been ID'd yet.
What's your point, Poe? Flynn asked.
My point, Steph, is that you're thinking like someone who doesn't know Cumbria. It might be the third largest county in England, but it's sparsely populated.
And that means...
that it's statistically unlikely that these men didn't know each other.
Flynn and Reed stared at him. Bradshaw, for whom the word statistic was a starter pistol, began typing.
I'm from here, and so is Killian, and we can tell you that everyone seems to know everyone.
It's a bit thin, Flynn said.
It is, Poe agreed. But if you also consider that all the victims were in the same age and socio-economic group, the odds of them not knowing each other reduces even further. This isn't Knightsbridge. Parts of Cumbria have a lower GDP than the Czech Republic. Just how many millionaires do you think we have?
The only sound was Bradshaw's keyboard.
But we're sure they didn't know each other, Flynn insisted. Unless you're saying we've all missed something.
Poe shrugged.
Sort of. But it comes back to my first point. Why was there such a big gap between the first and second victims?
He waited.
What if these men did know each other, but had made concerted efforts to hide it? And what if these men would know if they were being picked off? A pattern only they could see. Now, when Graham Russell's murdered, so what? He'd overseen the hacking of the phones of murder and paedophile victims all over the country. The list of people who wished him harm must have been huge. And whatever the file might say now, we know that's the line of inquiry Gamble initially took. If I'm right, it's entirely possible the others simply put it down to bad luck on Russell's part. But when victim number two is killed in the same way, even the most optimistic of them would know what was happening. The immolation man has no reason to take it slowly anymore. In fact, if he's working through a list, he has every reason to speed up.
Flynn frowned.
But if they knew they were being targeted, why didn't they go to the police?
They couldn't,
Reed said. If Poe's right, then they might be linked by something they couldn't speak about.
And given their individual wealth, it's almost certainly something illegal, Poe added.
But we're not sure when the men were abducted, Flynn said. It's possible they were all taken before anyone was killed.
No theory was perfect, thought Poe.
3.6%, Bradshaw said, looking up from her computer. They stared at her. Using a program I've just written, I've calculated that the odds of three men from that social group in a county with a population of 73.4 people per kilometre squared, not knowing each other, are 3.6%. There are some variables that take it as low as 2% and as high as 3.9, but the maths is sound.
Reed was staring open-mouthed. You wrote a program? He looked at his watch. In under 5 minutes?
Bradshaw nodded. It wasn't hard, D.S. Reed. I simply adapted an existing tool I have.
Poe stood up. That's settled, then. We don't argue with Tilly and maths.
Bradshaw gave Poe a shy, grateful glance. Let's get to work, then, Flynn said.
12 hours later, and they were all in a foul mood. They hadn't found the slightest hint that the men might have known each other. They hadn't been in the same golf clubs, they hadn't sat on the same charitable boards, and on the few occasions they'd eaten at the same restaurants, it was at different times. Bradshaw had managed to get their supermarket loyalty card details, and they hadn't shopped in the same stores. Reed rang Gamble, who promised to re-interview their neighbours and friends to see if anything was missed, but Poe's theory wasn't looking good. Adding to their misery was the fact that the room wasn't working. Due to the constant interruptions, they couldn't put anything confidential or graphic on the wall. Tea and coffee being delivered, the events manager checking they didn't need anything. And on 3 separate occasions, residents walking into the room thinking it was the dining room. One numbskull, twice. And at the end of the day, they had to take everything down and pack it away as it wasn't a secure room. Although this was only the first time they'd sat down with everything laid out, the sense of despondency was palpable. There was a knock on the door, and the events manager popped her head in.
I know you said you didn't want to be disturbed, but can I just check you don't want menus brought in for the evening meal? The dining room's about to shut.
Can I make a suggestion? Poe asked after she'd left. Why don't we work from my house tomorrow? Downstairs is open plan and about the same size as this room. I don't have rules about pinning things to my walls, and it's more secure than this place. Plus, most of the time, I'll be there anyway.
I don't know about that, Poe, Flynn said. You're supposed to be the next victim, remember?
All the better that I don't have to travel back and forth to the hotel every day, then. If anyone's going to try and grab me, it'll be when I'm out on the moor on my own.
There was a moment's silence while Flynn considered it. Tilly, she asked, would you get a signal up there? If I don't, I'll tether my phone to anything we need internet access to. How would we get there? Flynn asked Poe. I was happy to tramp across as a one-off, but I'm not doing that every day.
I'll leave you and Tilly my quad. Any stuff you need to bring can go in the trailer. What about me? Reed asked.
You? You can fucking walk, Poe said.
Reed grinned. Everyone looked at Flynn, waiting for her decision.
Well, it's got to be worth a try. Today was a disaster.
Chapter 13 Poe collected Edgar, then returned the quad to the hotel. The walk across the fells to Herdwick Croft was invigorating. The fading light had turned everything a rich shade of crimson. Edgar ran off to chase a rabbit, but soon came bouncing back. Poe doubted he'd know what to do if he ever got near one. He fixed himself a simple supper, a cheese and pickle sandwich, a bag of crisps and a cup of strong tea. The day might not have been a success, but Poe was sure he was right. The immolation man was targeting his victims using more than just age and wealth. He reordered the thoughts in his mind. He hoped he was right. If he weren't, then somewhere out there was an organized, forensically aware, technically proficient serial killer who liked to castrate and burn people.
And he was next. Although Edgar would howl like a wolf if anyone approached the croft at night, for the first time since Poe had lived there, he locked the